in New York City, 53 degrees with fair skies. For WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Chris Bangert-Drowns. Thanks for listening.
Good afternoon, Washington, D.C., Maryland, Virginia, wherever you are tuned in. You are listening to Taking Action here on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C. My name is Daniel Del Pielago, and as always, thank you so much for tuning in to our show here every Tuesday afternoon, but also for your listenership and support to WPFW. It really does mean a lot to all of us here at the station. And to the other listeners in the community that we built here over many, many a decade now. So thank you. Thank you so much for tuning in. This afternoon, as you may recall, for folks who listen regularly, this past Tuesday, we did a show to preview an upcoming event that was taking place, the Tenant Talkback. So we'll hear a little bit about how that went. We'll also listen to a couple of historical pieces around housing here in the district and the kind of cyclical nature of displacement that we unfortunately see and that we may be gearing up for again here in the district. And also some music. Over the weekend, as I mentioned, we held the Tenant Talk Back in Power DC. And it was really great to play music for folks that really resonated with the event and with folks. And I want to share the song that we started off the event with. It's a song by a group called Serious Business, comprised of Jerry Boo Hill and Ngoma Hill, who put out a couple of great albums on the Folkways label. And we're going to start off by checking out the song titled High Rise Tenements. This is from their album, titled For Your Immediate Attention. So let's start with checking that out.
High rise tenements. High rise tenements. No sentiment for the residents. Above his head at 39, why is he dead? High rise tenements. Oh no, no sentiments for the residents. High rise tenements.
Oh no,
no sentiments for the residents.
Now landlord wants to raise the rent, inflation up 18%. Con Ed sucks your pocket dry. Oil bills rise into the sky.
High rise tenements.
Oh no,
no sentiments
CBS or NBC. Censorship of truth denies realities of human rights.
High rise, gentlemen. No sentiments for the resident. High rise, gentlemen.
No sentiments
for the resident.
Now we can stop and start anew. Something good for me and you. Organize, it's time to fight. For decent housing is our right.
High rise, gentlemen.
No sentiments
for the residents.
High rise, gentlemen. No sentiments for the
Once again, a wonderful song by the group Serious Business, who put out this album titled For Your Immediate Attention. The song we heard was High Rise Tenements. And the gentleman there in Goma Hill just says it, right? We got to organize. We got to organize for better housing. And that's what was taking place over this past weekend. This past Saturday, the Tenant Talkback event took place. It was a meeting to hear from residents in the District of Columbia who have faced displacement, who have faced issues in applying and receiving the support from the city known as ERAP, the Emergency Rental Assistance Program. It was a very well-attended event. There were over 50 tenants that attended and shared their story, many powerful stories, folks sharing their stories of displacement, of how difficult it is to be in the process. One story that really stood out for me, or a theme that really stood out for me, to be honest, because we heard this from several people, were how difficult it was in the process of trying to find secure work, right? People are out there trying to find jobs that will keep them, that will allow them to be able to pay their rent and, of course, all of the other needs that we as human beings have. But the difficulty it is to balance that and also balancing the applications that one has to fill out for the Emergency Rental Assistance Program and how difficult that is. So folks get caught up in this terrible cycle of, you know, what do you prioritize, right? Because you need that immediate influx of infusion, rather, of dollars, of resources, of emergency rental assistance, but you're also trying to balance, you know, finding a long a job that keeps you financially stable for the long run. So it was heart-wrenching, to say the least, to hear these stories of the difficulties that folks are having just being able to stay in the city. But it was also very encouraging to hear from folks about, first of all, for folks just making that journey on a Saturday morning to share their stories with their peers and with everyone else that was in attendance. But the idea that we have to keep fighting, that we have to keep organizing, that people have to raise their stories and share their voices. And that was really the primary goal of this event, was to really center resident voice and impact, to make sure that that story is being heard, that those that the impact that lessening resources for low-income district residents is being heard. Because as we discussed this past week, the Emergency Rental Assistance Program is being changed. It was changed under emergency legislation. There's actually a hearing coming up this coming Friday to make it permanent legislation. So we'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But once again, it was just really, really encouraging that folks, you know, not only shared their stories, but said, I'm going to do something else about it, right? I'm going to register for this hearing. I'm going to tell these power brokers, these folks in power, that, you know, my voice is important, my experience is important, and that, you know, I, along with my neighbors, deserve help and deserve to stay here in the city that we've helped to build. So very, very encouraging meeting and event for folks to come out. You know, this was hopefully the first in a series of such events to once again center tenant voice, to make sure that the impact that you know, when resources that help low-income district residents start to get cut, that are not available or are made more difficult to access, you know, that we're hearing these stories from people who are feeling it firsthand. So we will continue to share these stories. The event was video, it was recorded via video. So we'll actually have some of those stories to hear and to share here on this very show in the near future when they are edited and heard, excuse me, edited for your listenership. So we hope to have those soon to share here and on other platforms, because once again, the real goal is to make sure that these voices are being heard far and wide, and you know, the other side of the story is being told, not the side, not that we're only hearing from the side of the landlord and of the big, you know, money interest developers who are saying, you know, we need to make it easier, essentially, to evict folks. We need to get back to the natural cycle of evictions. And we heard some strong voices over the weekend that are going to help to push back against that flawed narrative. As I mentioned, for folks who may be interested, there is a hearing this coming Friday that the Housing Committee is holding, led by Robert White. Robert White is the chairman of that committee in the City Council, and they are holding a hearing to make that emergency legislation a permanent legislation. You can go to the City Council's website and find more information on that. You can find out, you can see the list of people who have registered. You can also register yourself if you'd like. If I'm not mistaken, the last day to register is on the 13th. So if you'd like to find more information on this hearing, please make sure to go to the City Council's website, and if I'm not mistaken, that is just dccouncil.us. So make sure to visit that website to find out more information. Okay, great. I think that is really important information for folks to have. It does seem like it's going to be quite a hearing. There's about 90 people registered already. So, you know, it'll be an interesting day of testimony from district residents about the Emergency Rental Assistance Program. And I think it's always important, although we covered this last week, just briefly to touch upon the changes that will happen to this program, because I know many people are depending on it. As we understand it, the ERAP program is you apply through a portal, a website that had been opening on a quarterly basis. As we understand it, because of this legislation, the portal was closed and folks weren't able to apply. We were expecting it to open at the beginning of October. And because of the emergency legislation, the portal had not reopened, but it is expected to reopen on the 20th of this month. So next, in a couple of days. You can find more information if you just do a search on ERAP, Emergency Rental Assistance Program in DC, you'll be taken to the website. You can find the website where you can apply. And unfortunately, that's the only way to apply is through this online portal. But you will find more information and what you need. But some of the changes that were brought about by this emergency legislation is that applicants will not have to submit income and asset documentation. So previously, you could self-certify. Now, folks have to provide the documents, the actual documents that are being requested. Applicants will have to submit documentation related to the nature of the emergency. So to a large extent, you're going to have to prove that you have some sort of emergency. You lost your job, you, someone in your family, someone you're taking care of, you know, had to go to the hospital and you've incurred extra cost. Those are just examples. But as part of the process, as I understand it, is that they will have to provide documentation to prove that some sort of emergency is being involved in your applying for this monetary help. If you can't, you'll have to self-certify the emergency and explain why no documentation could be provided. The emergency is now defined as an unforeseen or unusual event, such as the loss of a job, as I stated earlier. All ERAP stays are now discretionary, not mandatory. A stay is when a judge says, essentially, we're pausing this case. So prior to this legislation, a judge could pause the case almost automatically if you had an application, an ERAP application, in the pipeline, as it were. Now that is at the discretion of the judge. And so we are really encouraging folks to, if you have been summoned to court for non-payment of rent, of course, for any other thing, but in this matter that we're talking about, usually it's non-payment of rent. We are really encouraging folks to make sure that they attend that first hearing that you are summoned to. Is going to be really important, even if you have an ERAP application, because the judges, as we hear, are starting to make judgment and say, even if you have an application but you miss that first hearing, we're going to rule against you if you don't show up. So very, very important for folks in this process to know to make that first hearing. Only one, as I mentioned, around the stays, the pauses, only one stay per case is allowed, but judges have the discretion to extend it. Once a writ, once essentially a judge says, you know, we are going to take your unit, you've not paid for your rent, you can't show that you can prove for your rent, you don't have the help from the Emergency Rental Assistance Program, that'll cover the arrearage that you have, you know, they'll be able to, the marshals will be able to take control of the unit. You know, so even if you have a certain amount, even a large amount of your rent arrearage covered by ERAP, if it doesn't cover the whole amount, a writ will still be issued. So a lot of information that folks need to know and prepare as we move through this new era of how this program works. But of course, this speaks to a larger problem in the district where rents are not affordable. The cost of living is not affordable. Folks don't have the employment that they need to be able to pay for all these things, essentially. So please stay aware of these changes and the how the resources out there are drying up and how it's becoming tougher to access these resources. So that's going to be really important information for district residents to know. You can always reach out to us at Empower DC for any clarification. And there's a bunch of other good folks doing work out here, a lot of legal service providers that are doing some really great work around these issues. That's kind of why I wanted to play some of these videos, these historical documents, around you know, how properties, land, buildings have been taken from folks with the promise of return in some cases, but also what folks have done to try to take control of their neighborhoods and work with their neighbors to have more control and more decision-making power around what happens in the neighborhoods and areas of the city and where they live. I'd love to hear some stories if folks have anything to share around, you know, their experience applying for ERAP, around any experiences with displacement, you know, anything to share that you would find valuable for others to hear is really important. We always want to create that platform here on this show. So if you do want to share a story with us, please give us a call, 202-588-0893. Once again, that's 202-588-0893 to reach us here at Taking Action here on WPFW. As mentioned, I wanted to share some video here of Ms. Kimmy Gray. Kimmy Gray, for folks who don't know, was a tenant activist, you know, just an activist in general, who did a lot of great work in the city to explore how tenants could have more control of the neighborhoods that they lived in. So we're going to hear an interview that Ms. Kimmy Gray did in 1990, if I'm not mistaken, on C-SPAN, where she talks about what she, along with her neighbors, have done to try to have more control over their neighborhood. So this is Kimmy Gray. She was part of the Kenilworth Parkside Residential Management Corporation. They always want to play these ads, so please give me just one second as I fast forward through this, and we will be right back here on Taking Action.
And business leaders here in the nation's capital. We call the series American Profiles, and tonight we talk with Kimmy Gray, chairperson of the
For this community.
What is Kenilworth Parkside?
Kenilworth Parkside is the only resident managed public housing development within the Washington, D.C. area, first and only. And we are the first in the country of residents to seek home ownership of this housing complex. We consist of 464 units. We are located on the far northeast side of Washington, D.C., boundaries being 295 Parkway and our lovely Potomac River. Well, we have Prince George's County, one boundary, and a residential community. It's a very lovely community adjacent to us. Our demographic is that we have a population when fully occupied of some 2,500 to 3,000 residents, and they're predominantly headed up by females. The families are, but you find that 85 to 90% of our families are working families and have lived here for a number of years, some as long as 30 years. And that's why we came to the point that if we invested all the federal dollars into rehabbing of the property, then Kenilworth Parkside residents itself owes itself the responsibility of rehabbing the people so they can maintain it. And only way it can be done is if we begin to buy and own it. And with that feeling, that's what we seek to do from the federal government, which concurred with us, and so did our mayor of Washington, D.C.
You say we a lot when you tell that or make that description, but a lot of people would say it's not we, but it's Kimmy Gray.
Oh, no. Let me say this. Kimmy Gray has been selected, elected, and pushed forward to be the spokesman for the 3,000 residents that I speak of. When I say me, I truly mean we. The dream Kimmy Gray had in the beginning, and that was way back in the 60s, was that we should manage our property because we could not do any worse than at that time the federal government and the local housing authority was doing. Our conditions were deplorable. I mean, roofs were literally caving in, trash pickup was outrageous, and people were delinquent and rent, and households were torn apart. There was no family within our community. And we felt as if we could do no worse than what was already occurring to our housing complex. When I say we, I mean jointly, a group of residents come together and decided that we should manage. Then we decided if we're gonna manage and we're gonna fix up, then we should own. And some persons out here felt as if they have already paid enough rent to have bought the unit anyway for 30 years. So no, it's clearly we. I mean, you'll find that within our community, there's no such thing as I, me, nor my. It's we, us, and our out here. We crowd together. We all live together and we share. And we indeed so fight together because it's our idea and it's our dream. And all we tell ourselves now is that it's a deferred dream right now, because right now we're in the process of negotiating forever to complete our dream. But it's definitely we. It has to be we to be successful.
I want to go back to the 60s with you. How old were you when you first came here?
I came to Kilmer Courts when I was 21 years old.
Under what circumstances?
My husband and I had separated, and financially I could not afford the home I was buying. And so therefore I had to resort to moving into public housing with 5 children to raise.
How large was the unit you moved into?
3 bedrooms.
How much did it cost?
I paid at that time, I think, about $85 a month, because at that time I had to also receive public, I was also placed on public assistance.
Do you remember what you felt like when you first moved in here? You described a fairly dire situation around here.
It was. I had moved, my husband and I had, were in the process of purchasing a home. We separated. I had to then move where I could afford to a 1-bedroom unit for my 5 children. So when public housing did call me, and I had 3 bedrooms coming to me, it was like moving to heaven. And even though exteriorly Kilmer Parkside wasn't the most beautiful place in the world by this time, internally it had been rehabbed. Walls were painted, tiles had been laid, it was clean. And I knew that's the way it could be for the entire development. And I had small children, and my only wish was that they placed me on the first floor, and they did. And I always seen Kenilworth as being a beautiful property. I remember when it was first built. My in-laws lived here. I remember riding out here, and I thought, oh, how beautiful it is. The Quaddy Gardens, a national park right next to it. This is excellent. And I believe that it's going to be excellent again as soon as we complete our rehab.
What happened in the interim so that it went downhill?
A lot of federal dollars were withdrawn, as it has been around the entire United States. Prior to this last administration, monies began to deteriorate. And as monies began to be withdrawn from the housing complexes under different administrations, federal, we found, and out of mismanagement of monies being done at local level, that the person that suffered the most are the residents that reside within the housing communities. We have no control over that. Also, you understand that through the late 60s, early 70s, there was a national rent strike by residents to protest the way that their properties were being maintained. And when the rent strike came, that meant even less money to invest in the properties, which caused even further deterioration. So we came back, we had to totally reorganize. And a lot of it had to be done by residents themselves. They had begun to say, what role will we play? What is our responsibility? My front yard, I mean, I can dig up, I can plant grass there. I mean, I can wash windows. I mean, I can put a lock on the front door. There are some courses I can be taking to provide some minor home repair to my home where it does not literally fall in on me. But it was some structure, infrastructure, that totally deteriorated that no one wanted to take responsibility for. Everybody was busy pointing fingers at one another. Then later it came up where we started doing rehab. Well, even at that time, Kilmer Parkside wasn't considered. Instead, what happened was that the city government, along with the federal government, decided that they were placed under private management. Private management managed for a profit. When you manage public housing for a profit, it's hard because the money should go back into the housing complex so you can further upgrade it for the families that are residing there. You know, the federal government has this mandate to move people in, up, and out of decent, safe living conditions. But out to where? Up to what? I mean, with the shortage of housing. And that began way back. That didn't just happen yesterday. And now the people understand, I believe, within public housing, especially in Kilmer Parkside and D.C. area, that we have more responsibility than just merely paying rent once a month.
When you first got here, did you think it was going to be a short-term situation for you?
Oh, definitely so. My intentions were to move in with my 5 children, get off welfare, get a job by going back to school, get a formal education, and moving out into another home with my 5 children. And it was not as easy as I thought.
Why not?
Because as a single parent, raising 5 children alone, it's a harder job than most people anticipated being. Folk talk about it, y'all, the new woman nowadays, she take on the challenges. You need 2 to raise a family. And I've never denied that. And the job I took upon myself to raise my 5 children was not just a challenge, it was a real job. And I just thank God that my 5 children ended up as well as they did. When you move into an environment of this type, if you're not safe, the community will take the children from you. And that was my biggest fear. So it took my focus from actually moving out as more so I focused on protecting and keeping things in place. What you'll find within public housing environments is that majority of people begin to focus on survival, okay, not succeeding. because it is a totally, it distracts you. It will have you refocus different. So when we started talking about succeeding, we were told we're crazy. If you are poor, you will, I mean, they created the name permanent underclass, that's what you would be. And I differ with that greatly now. I understand what had happened. That when I was moved here as a young woman, I was distracted from my original plan of succeeding to merely survival, which prolonged my stay. I'm trying to see that never reoccurs within my family and making sure it doesn't reoccur in other families. But you have to create certain programs within our type of community to make sure it doesn't reoccur. And that's what no one is really willing to invest into until we create a resident management.
That was Kimmy Gray, an interview that she did on C-SPAN on January 11th of 1990. You can find that on the web. And what was really interesting to me about that video, especially that part of the video, it's a very long video. It's over an hour long, the interview. But what I really appreciate from her was, first of all, she's talking about taking control with her and her neighbors, knowing the real solutions. But she also underscores a couple of themes that we've already touched upon on the show today and in this last show, but was the disinvestment that happens and how conditions become very difficult for people living on these properties. In this specific case, she's talking about the residents at Kenilworth back in those days. And she talks about how difficult it is just to balance life when there are fewer resources, right? As a single mom, it was very hard for her, she says, to balance raising her children, you know, having a decent job that would allow her to do that, and then very little resources. And that's what we unfortunately heard quite a bit, as I mentioned earlier in the show, over this past Saturday. Folks trying to do it, right? Trying to follow, you know, the so-called formula to success here in this country. Finding a job, looking for work, so they are able to pay their rent and the other expenses, but getting caught up in how difficult that can be. So that's something that we really want to lift up and ensure that especially those making decisions really hear and understand. Not only hear it, but really understand it. So when there are, you know, changes to policies, to programs that support low-income residents, you know, they know what impact it can really have, and hopefully not change it, but do more to actually help folks. Folks, you are tuned in to Taking Action here on WPFW 89.3 FM. My name is Daniel Del Pielago. We've been talking a little bit about what happened this past Saturday at the Tenant Talkback event that Empower DC put on to hear from DC renters around how difficult it is to pay for the rent and everything else in such an expensive city, and some of the challenges that the changes to the emergency rental assistance program are causing for many tenants who have already experienced displacement and housing insecurity here in the district. We just heard Kimmy Gray, recording from 1990, kind of underscoring some of these very same points that we continue to see, unfortunately, in the city. So we wanted to make sure to provide that historical context and to hopefully, so we stop avoiding these pitfalls. We stop, to a large extent, sacrificing a sector of our community here, of the city, that just has to bear the brunt of how expensive it is to simply survive, as Ms. Gray put it in her interview there. If you have a story you'd like to share, we'd love to hear it. 202-588-0893, 202-588-0893. I'm going to play a couple of more songs in hopes that we can line up a few calls for folks. This is a classic DC song, and I think after hearing Miss Kimmy Gray speak, she said, you know, we did it, because the reporter tries to say, oh, isn't it all Kimmy Gray that's doing it? And Miss Kimmy Gray says, no, it is we who are doing it, right? Her and her neighbors. So we're going to hear the one and only, the Soul Searchers, Chuck Brown and the Soul Searchers, doing their classic song, We the People. ¶¶
story I want to tell you. I got a little story right now I want to tell you. It's about to feed the people. Feed the people. It's about to feed the people. Feed the people. Feed the people. Feed the people. Oh, feed the people. Feed the people. Feed the people. Feed the people. We'll be right back.
from front to back. There's more love for your fellow man. Thousands of people joining hands. All people are changing. I said people are changing. Don't you know this whole world is changing. How do I know? Let me tell you so. One more example, take the time when we were afraid or to even talk. White and black, red and yellow, never could walk all side by side. Now we can. There's more love for your fellow man. Thousands of people, all of us joining hands. People, everybody's changing.
That was Tibby Thomas with a song called People Are Changing. Folks may remember a similar sound. Tibby Thomas did a song, Why Can't We Get Together? But this is one of his other songs. And once again, just building on this theme of working together, people working for a better change, for a different change. And as I mentioned and shared earlier, at a recent event that Empower DC held over the weekend, that's what we heard, the need, the call for people working together, the need for better supports for low-income people in a city that just keeps getting more expensive, that keeps creating undue burden for many low-income residents and families. And that's what we've been discussing here this afternoon. We've been listening to some historical video. And before we wrap up, I wanted to share another wonderful video, historical video. There was a documentary put out called Southwest Remembered that deals with urban renewal and what we saw happen in Southwest. And I'm going to play a short vignette of folks talking about what promises they were made and how, unfortunately, those were not delivered on, right? Which is something that we continue to see, unfortunately, in these days and times. So let's check out this brief clip from the documentary titled Southwest Remembered that was hosted by DC News' own Renee Poussant. So let's check this out.
And Redevelopment Land Agency social workers made house calls to residents.
And see, when they came to me, I was, I didn't see Mr. Banks at this time, but I knew he was in the area. It was a social worker, a black social worker, and a tall white guy with a attaché case. And over the years, not knowing what's going on in the tradition of a child where your parents teach you that they have theirs and you have yours, you're not aware of what's going on. You're just scared to hear come a white man with a attaché case, but a sophisticated black woman saying that we're going to give you a place to stay. You have to move out this unit.
Members of the Redevelopment Land Agency would come into my restaurant to eat and eat there, and I met them and became very friendly with them. And they painted a beautiful picture of the new Southwest. But I realized that their idea of a beautiful picture was in contrast to what the businessman who was going to be displaced.
Oh, they had pamphlets on this little village of these lovely little houses that you can move into. You're going to have transportation. It's going to be a supermarket. It's going to be a clinic. It's going to be a theater. You're going to have everything you want in this little village.
Displaced Southwest residents often were compensated for less than their property was worth.
The woman across the street from us, whose husband was dead, and she had six children, and they had a nice home that they had kept up, and it had about four or five bedrooms, which they really needed. And when she was put out of her home. They gave her $10,000. And I don't know where she could have gone and gotten another home that would be big enough for her.
It was my feeling that when there was a tornado or a storm or a flood or some other catastrophe occurred in a given area, the government would provide disaster relief. It was my feeling that when the government itself was responsible for putting a derrick and raising a given area, it was similar to this natural destructiveness, and that they should make some provision to help these displaced businessmen to relocate elsewhere.
Well, there was a big stink about raising these people out, and Congress finally passed a law where they had to pay moving expenses of these people up to $2,000 or $3,000, I forget, because these people were being uprooted. Not only owners, but renters were being uprooted from their homes, and it's not easy to move. It's also expensive to move.
They told me I could come back to the area where I live. I would just be moving in this little village temporarily until they complete the, renovate the units. And I said, well, what's happened to these houses that's been torn down over here? Oh, don't worry about them. They were old wooden shacks, but these are strong brick houses. We're not going to tear these down. We're just going to move you out to the village, and you will enjoy the village. And when we finish renovating your house, you can come back.
When they got through, practically everyone in Southwest in the redevelopment area, in fact, everyone in the redevelopment areas were moved out. And very few of those who were there originally could afford to come back, unless they qualified for public housing or had some very fancy incomes.
The goal of...
That was a brief clip from the documentary Southwest Remembered. That can be found on YouTube if you're interested in watching it. It's another fairly long video, but definitely worth the watch. And once again, I wanted to share that video because you hear the same theme, right? The promises. If you relocate, if you move, you know, you can come back, but oftentimes it becomes just too expensive, just too darn expensive to be able to stay or return to neighborhoods that people get displaced from. And that's what we unfortunately are continuing to see here in the District of Columbia, especially as rents are not keeping up with the incomes that folks have. So once again, this past weekend, we heard those very same stories of the difficult choices people have to make. The other piece that we also heard quite a bit was, you know, the tenants are really expected to play the big role, right? They may have to put up with conditions, housing conditions that aren't healthy. And what we heard was oftentimes a lot of landlords aren't doing their part, right? Are not keeping their properties up to code. And in the emergency rental assistance program, you know, oftentimes what we've heard, and I think there needs to be better data, but we've definitely heard this from tenants we work with, is that the payments, even if they are successful in getting payments, aren't being credited to their accounts. And also in the emergency rental assistance process, that ultimately benefits landlords, because they are the ones that will receive the money. The money does not go to tenants. It does not go directly to tenants at all. It goes to the landlord to bring down the arrearage that a tenant may have. But the landlord's not doing their part of the documentation requested and required from them in order to avail themselves of the help from this program. So once again, folks, we just wanted to make sure that we were touching on these issues. They're going to be very important. As I mentioned, there's a hearing this coming Friday around the making the emergency rental assistance program changes permanent. If you want to find out more about that, you can go to the DC Council's website, dccouncil.us, to find out more about the hearing, when it'll take place, how to register, and all of that stuff. If you have questions about anything you heard today, if you are in a situation and you want to know a little bit more, hear about important information, or become tuned in to efforts to push back and organize against these efforts, please make sure to give us a call at Empower DC. You can reach me at 202-731-8634. You can also reach me via email at 202-588-0893. This evening, we are holding an event, a meeting for those folks who may have registered for the hearing. We are going to be meeting with other residents and other advocates here in the city, just a plan for that hearing. If you are interested in learning more about that, please give us a call. Well, you can call me at the number that I just gave out, or email me at the email that I just put out there, 202-731-8634, or daniel@empowerdc.org. Once again, thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in, for supporting, taking action. We really do feel that this is an important platform to share what's happening in the city, and making sure that folks are tuned in and knowing what's happening, but then most importantly, being able to find ways to support and to take action, as our show is named. So once again, thank you for your listenership. Thank you for your support to Empower DC and to WPFW. We really do appreciate it. We're doing really great work together, and we really do value this radio station that allows us to do this. So stay tuned. You've got the news coming up in just a couple of seconds, and then you've got Capitalism, Race, and Democracy right after. Thank you, and we will catch you next Tuesday. Peace, everyone.
This is Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century, with an announcement of a very important event, a national town hall meeting to assess the impact of the 2024 presidential election on the state of Black America and the Pan-African world. Progress or disaster. Thursday, November 14th, 6:30 p.m. sharp at the New York Avenue Presbyterian Church, 1313 New York Avenue Northwest in Washington, D.C. Speakers include Mark Moriel, Dr. Julianne Malvo, Melanie Campbell, Reverend Siobhan Arlene Bradley, Hillary Shelton, Dr. George Frazier, Mel Foote, Maurice Mitchell, and Dr. Melina Abdullah. For further information, visit the website ibw21.org. That's ibw21.org.
Good afternoon. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Darnia Samuels. Here are some headlines for this hour. Back in May of this year, Donald Trump became the first former U.S. president to be convicted of felony crimes, as a New York jury found him guilty of all 34 charges in a scheme to illegally influence the 2016 election. The scheme was through a hush money payment of $130,000 to adult film actress Stormy Daniels to buy her silence about claims that she had a sexual affair with Trump. Trump's felony conviction carries the possibility of a fine, probation, or up to 4 years in prison. Trump's lawyers have requested that his historic criminal conviction be thrown out because of a U.S. Supreme Court ruling this summer on presidential immunity. Today, New York Judge Juan Merchan was expected to rule on that dismissal request. However, the judge told Trump's lawyers that he would pause proceedings and delay the ruling until at least next Tuesday, November 19th, so that prosecutors can give their view of what to do in light of Donald Trump's presidential election win last week. It has been over 1 year since the war in Gaza began in October 2023. That amounts to over 400 days. Within that time frame, countless people, including women and children, have died, and thousands of Palestinians have been displaced during the attacks on the Gaza Strip. One displaced individual had this to say in part, and I quote, "The 400 days that have passed feel like 400 years, maybe even more. Before, we were living decently. We were fine and happy, receiving aid packages twice a month. Now there's no food, no water, no medicine. There's nothing. We are deprived of everything, even the air we breathe," end quote. Israel has failed to meet a 30-day deadline that was set by the Biden administration to end its starvation campaign in northern Gaza, where the United Nations say a famine is imminent. The name Harriet Tubman evokes thoughts of courage, fearlessness, and freedom. After escaping slavery herself, Tubman, known as Black Moses, famously served as a conductor on the Underground Railroad, rescuing about 70 people from slavery. Ms. Tubman was also the first woman to oversee an American military action during a time of war. She served as a scout, spy, and nurse for the Union Army during the Civil War, helping to guide 150 Black soldiers on a gunboat raid in South Carolina. Now, over 111 years after her death, Harriet Tubman has been named a one-star brigadier general in the Maryland National Guard. The official naming ceremony took place yesterday, Veterans Day, at the Harriet Tubman Underground Railroad State Park in Dorchester County, Maryland. Governor Wes Moore, who led the ceremony, had this to say about General Tubman.
"This is a person who is one of the greatest Marylanders we've ever known, and someone who was willing to risk her own freedom, her own safety, her own life in order to help others. I mean, that is patriotism. That's heroism. And so it's only appropriate that we now have a General Harriet Tubman."
The reading of the official order was followed by a symbolic pinning ceremony with General Harriet Tubman's great-great-great-grandniece, Tina Wyatt. To the D.C. area, Prince William County Public Schools in Virginia are considering what its formal cell phone policy will be in the new year. The division expanded a cell phone pilot program to all middle and high schools this school year, restricting phone use. The program mandates that middle school students have their cell phones off and away the entire school day, while high school students are required to abide by the off and away policy only during instructional class time. The pilot program was expanded over the summer around the same time that Governor Glenn Youngkin announced an executive order mandating cell phone-free education. A formal cell phone policy vote by the Prince William County School Board is expected on December 4th. In today's weather, it's currently about 60 degrees in D.C. That's all for your headline news this hour. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Darnia Samuels. Please be safe. I'm Darnia Samuels. Please be safe, and thank you for listening.